Welcome to the Curious About Nature podcast. This is a podcast for folks who want to connect with nature and rewild childhood. Hosted by Rachel Mills, Buttercup Learning's founder, an educator with 20 plus years of experience, with a passion for animation, the natural world and conservation. Rachel focuses on getting digital kids outdoors and having fun in nature, promoting well-being and a can-do attitude to local wildlife conservation and sustainable living. Join her and her guests for their stories, experiences and tips to support outdoor learning and nature connection.
Welcome to the Curious About Nature podcast. This week I'm joined by Dr. Sarah Pye, who's a writer, speaker and educator. Hi there, Sarah.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's lovely to finally meet you. I've obviously been introduced to you with a mutual friend.
Yeah, and, it's really funny to see a person.
Yes, exactly. I'm curious to know a little bit about you. Could you tell us a little bit about your background?
Absolutely. So at the moment, I'm talking to you from Australia. I live in Brisbane, just north of Brisbane on the Sunshine Coast. But I haven't always been here. So I actually was born in the crazy place of Gibraltar. Most people don't know where it is when you're in Australia. I think most of your UK listeners will probably know where Gibraltar is. Tiny little British outpost in the middle of nowhere on the southern tip of Spain. And I was born there because my dad was in the Royal Air Force at the time. I then grew up in the UK on the Norfolk Broads. So I sailed a lot on the Norfolk Broads during my early years and moved to the Isle of Wight when my dad was a sailing instructor at the National Sailing Centre. And then my life took a real change when my adventurous parents, who were both teachers, decided that when I was 13 that they'd had enough of England. They'd had enough of the English education system. And they took my brother and I out of school and we moved onto a 32-foot sailing boat and took off on April 1st, 1979. Wow. So that sort of led to a lot of adventures, as you can imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Being boat schooled, it was the age of 13. That must have had a huge impact on your connection to nature. What are your most vivid memories of this time?
Yeah, some of them were obviously really positive and some of them were really challenging. If I talk about some challenging times, we had one five-day sail from Gibraltar to the island of Madeira where we had multiple gales back-to-back. We had seas that were just like, several metres tall and wind that was so strong we had to take down all our sails and just sail under bare poles for several days. The boat would rise up on these waves and it would be airborne and then it would come crashing down and every time it crashed on the waves I would think it was going to smash in pieces and that was for days. So that was, there's a negative. The positives, when the sun came out, when we're sailing along in a good clip and it was just absolute heaven. And sometimes you'd have dolphins sailing, surfing on your bow wave, or you'd have flying fish traipsing, just landing on the deck in the middle of the night and flapping around, and you try and save as many as you could by knocking them overboard before they died on the deck. And things like that were just, nature was part of my life because I realized that I needed nature and I needed to understand nature if I was to survive. So I think that gave me a totally different outlook than your modern urban kid.
Yeah, definitely. And it sounds like you continued this adventure further through your tourism and your business, ocean rafting. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I did. So, yeah, there's a bit of a gap there between being on the boat and ocean rafting. So I might fill in that gap just a little bit. So we ended up sailing from England down the coast of Europe to Gibraltar. We stayed there for about a year and a half or so, and my parents got some work. And then we managed to convince my dad that when I was 15, that we should sail across the Atlantic. So we did that. We were 27 days at sea and we ended up in Antigua in the West Indies, which was an absolute eye-opener for a little English kid. We landed on this beautiful white sandy beach, and there was literally, there was a steel band playing on the beach. There were people with darker skin than I'd been used to seeing walking up and down on the beach. There was sun, there was windsurfing, there was, this was Christmas in the Caribbean, was just unbelievably perfect. And it just, it was another sort of a total different world for, or an alien existence really for me. I loved the Caribbean and I stayed there for a long time. We stayed on the boat working, sailing in the Caribbean, and I got my captain's, my commercial captain's license when I was 20, before I could drive a car. So I could drive boats, and I started driving boats. So that led to this career in boat tourism. And I also then in the Caribbean met my to-be husband, who was a Californian beach bum, beautiful blonde hair, nice. He looked really good in a wetsuit. And he was a dive instructor. So we spent a lot of time in the Caribbean working on boats and kept moving our way west after that. So we moved to California for a while, where I finished my university degree. I was quite proud of that. I didn't go to high school at all. And then I ended up with a university bachelor's degree in California, and went to visit Australia, primarily because my brother had immigrated there. So we went to Australia and we all fell in love, just totally fell in love with Australia. We did this trip with my parents, and all four of us were just enamored with this incredible country. There's a very interesting story, which I'll tell as briefly as possible. But at the time, there, Richard Branson, who I'm probably sure you're aware of, who at the time owned Virgin Airways and Necker Island, an island in the Caribbean, he advertised for a management team to run Necker Island. And we knew Necker Island. We'd been there. We understood how it worked. Jay and I applied for this job, and we were really excited when we got down to the final two couples, and he flew us to New York for an interview. And we were so excited for this. We thought, shoo in, are we going to get this? And we didn't. The other couple got this job. We were absolutely devastated. And luckily, about a few months before we'd applied for that job, we put in for immigration to Australia. And we had thought there was no chance, no chance in that. We found that at that time that Australia allowed 4 people a year from Alaska, Guam and Hawaii. And we were living in Hawaii at the time. And we had no chance. Richard Branson didn't come off. And 2 weeks later, we got a letter in the mail saying you've been accepted to Australia. So things happen. You have these synchronous sliding door moments in your life. And that was one. So we ended up immigrating to Australia, to the Whitsunday Islands, and eventually creating this business called Ocean Rafting, which is an adventure product that takes people on fast inflatable, rigid inflatable boats around the Whitsunday Islands, exploring the beaches, snorkeling, and taking them on national park walks as well. So yeah, we designed the boat, we had them built, and we designed the tour and introduced that. So we were really excited when it was awarded the best adventure product in Queensland in 2001. We sold the business in 2002, and since then the new owners have just reaped in amazing awards. Even last week they were honored with a Queensland Gold Tourism Award. So yeah, really cool stuff to have, I guess, that baby growing. It just keeps growing and they keep doing really well with it.
Yeah.
So that was the long answer to your short question.
That's all right. I like how we got there. There's so much weaved in with, you know, how you got from tourism to emigrating to, yeah.
We covered a lot in that moment. But yeah, throughout it all, nature and educating and connecting people with nature has been a real core belief of mine, I think, because of my upbringing on the boat and because I had this different way of looking at human connection with nature. I've always wanted to connect people with it. Ocean Rafting allowed me to do that by taking people from around the world and showing them some of the wonders of the Barrier Reef Islands and the underwater world and some incredible Indigenous art. It was a magic job. I always said I had the best job in the world. Until I got a better job.
I think you've had some great jobs from the sound of it. Your trip to Borneo, which is obviously jumping ahead again, it sounds really inspiring. What made you go to Borneo in the first place?
From that experience in the Whitsundays, unfortunately, one of the downsides was that working together with your spouse is not always that conducive, and our marriage suffered. So we actually sold the business and we moved south to close to where my parents were in southern Queensland to try and save our marriage. And unfortunately, we weren't successful on that one. So I ended up being a single mum with a wanderlust. So a single mum with a wanderlust is a hard thing because you've got limited funds and limited support. But as often as possible, I would take my daughter to places that we could get to. One of those was Borneo. And Borneo had been on my bucket list forever because I wanted to see orangutans in the wild, ostensibly before they became extinct, which is a horrible reason to see a species. But that was my impetus. We went there in 2012, so Amber was 12, and we saw orangutans in the wild, and it was a really wonderful thing, but it wasn't that Jane Goodall moment that I was hoping for. And the person in our reception where we were staying, I told them I was a journalist. I was writing for a children's magazine at that time, and I was editing the magazine. And they said, oh, if you're writing an article, you need to talk to Dr. Wong. And they scribbled this name down on a piece of paper with a phone number and said, here you go, here's the phone number, here's the phone, go for it. And I put on my journalistic voice and I introduced myself to Dr. Wong, who created a rescue center for sun bears. And at that time, I really didn't even know sun bears existed. I didn't know they were critically endangered. And I didn't know that they were right in the same rainforest as these orangutans. So I went with Amber and we went to the sun bear center to meet Dr. Wong. It wasn't open to the public yet. But from the moment I saw sun bears climbing and swinging on trees and building nests like orangutans, I was hooked. I was hooked not just by the orangutans, but I was hooked by this man whose commitment to saving a species and his charisma was just mind-blowing. Yeah, I asked him what I could do to help, and this is another one of those sliding door moments because he said to me, his answer was, do what you do best. So those five powerful words have really shaped the last decade for me. I've been trying really hard to do what I can do best to help him save a species. Yeah. That's led to, I started off by introducing him to the university where I teach, and our design students have created all the interpretive signs at the Sun Bear Conservation Centre. Our students have done research projects. In 2014, I led a team of public relations students and we created an adoption programme, which helped save the species during COVID when the centre was closed to the public, and it helped raise money. But then, I don't know how I actually got the guts to do this, but in 2016, I asked Wong, who by now had become a close friend, I asked him if I could write his story. Yeah, he said yes. And that led to my new career as a writer. Yeah, things have changed completely by meeting this incredibly inspirational man.
I'm curious to know why are sun bears poached? And you mentioned obviously that they're critically endangered. What is it that is happening in that kind of local area?
The main problems that we have with sun bears are habitat loss, poaching, and the illegal pet trade. So first what happens is that the rainforest is cut down, so sun bears don't have as much of an area to live. Okay, so that's the first problem, and that's caused by agriculture. Most people will know about the idea of palm oil, and palm oil plantations have devastated areas of wild places. So that means that sun bears are then encroaching on human habitation by going into palm plantations to find food. And when they get there, they're up against humans. Yeah, so this doesn't doesn't end well, really. So that's the first thing you've got. And then the second thing, Chinese medicine producers use some bear products in Chinese medicine. The most important one is bear bile from the gallbladder. And bear bile is effective in some diseases and issues. But we now have a synthetic version, so we don't have to use bear bile. We can use synthetic versions instead. A poacher can make a great deal of money by killing a sun bear, taking out their gallbladder and selling that to Chinese medicine producers. And if they've done that, then they'll usually use other body parts as well. So this is, yeah, it's not particularly pretty. They'll take bear paws and sell them for bear paw soup. They'll take teeth and claws and sell those for jewelry or adornments. And then the rest of a bear will be used for bushmeat. So the villagers in poor villages will eat the bear, the remaining parts.
If I want to read the biography, Saving Sun Bears, where would I be able to buy a copy of that, Sarah?
You can buy copies through my website, which is sararpie.com. You can buy them on every platform like Amazon and all those sort of things. And you can also order them through your local bookshops. They are available globally through bookshops. I have a distributor who distributes directly through Australia and New Zealand. And I've got another one that distributes through the UK and the US. They should be relatively easy to find, fingers crossed. But if anyone has a problem finding one, then contact me and I'll help you work that out. My doctorate explored how we can use narratives or storytelling to engage non-scientists in conservation. So I had to produce like this exegesis or thesis, which explored that, and then a creative work. So the creative work was the narrative biography of Dr. Wong. Yeah, Saving Sun Bears.
I think what you've done since then, though, is really interesting, though, this idea of combining art and science and fun conservation to reach young audiences. And that's something that you see a lot of.
What I realized once I finished Saving Sun Bears and that was published, I realized that if we don't connect with the next generation, it could be our species that goes next. Who knows? We really need to reconnect kids to wild places and wild things. So I could use these stories that I gathered from Wong, and I could actually create children's books about his adventures with different species in the rainforest. So that sort of led to this series, these ones here. This is the Wildlife Wong series. Each one includes a story, a real life story about Wong with the species, because he spent 6 years in the jungle of Malaysia trying to trap sun bears, and he learned about all sorts of species along the way. So there's very cool stories about his adventures. They're not boring scientific laboratory stories. They're actually really hands-on adventures. Each book also includes cool animal facts and experiments, because I want to connect kids back to the story in a kinetic way. And as I'm sure all your listeners know, that kids have different ways of learning and connecting. So that way I can meet more of their needs and connect them all that way. I've now found that I've got another new career developing, where I actually go into schools and I do workshops around the book's content, and I do storytelling and informational sort of presentations around that too. And I'm joined by my puppet sidekick. So I've got a
random background.
Would you like to meet one?
Yeah, I can see one of them in the background, actually.
Oh, can you? There's someone back there, but there's someone on the side been waiting to meet you, Rachel. Let's see if she wants to come out. This is Pongo, are you coming? Okay.
Here you go.
Oh. Hi.
Hello, Pongo.
I'm Pongo. So Pongo, as you can see, is an orangutan. So she goes into schools and helps me engage kids in all these messages. She answers all their questions, don't you, Pongo?
Yeah, I do that. Hi. I'm a bit shy. Yeah, she's a little shy sometimes.
Obviously, being in animation, I love puppeteering anyway. I think it's a brilliant thing to be involved in. And so many people, not just children, respond to it.
Writing goal is, if kids love nature, then they will protect it. If they don't love it, they won't. So we've got to find ways for kids to love and respect and actually build awe in nature.
Yeah, I think we also have that natural curiosity when we're growing up, and we just need to recapture that. Is that I can still remember the age of three, my daughter going, well, why do bees have wings and why do they do this? Yeah, why? And it's like, oh, this is exciting. It got less after a little while, and then we decided to see if we could get her outside more again and get her reinvigorated and excited about it. And now she loves to stop and look at the worm on the pavement listen to the birds.
You've done well there, Rachel, because that's what we need. Yeah, but one of the things I found in my research for my doctorate is that when we want to connect people to large ideas, whether it be climate change or poaching or habitat destruction, whatever it is, if you can tell a story about an individual, kids will connect with that individual. So whether it be an individual worm or it's an individual sun bear or whoever it is, they'll connect through that individual and then they'll expand their minds out again. So yes, totally different than science. When science, we tend to use big numbers to tell our stories, but in narratives, we tend to focus on the macro instead. And that's a totally different way of looking. And it's a reason why scientists and storytellers need to work together to get out the science properly.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the reasons I've loved doing animation with students that involves working with conservation charities and trusts and bringing some of their science to life to people. So you mentioned there about obviously going to schools and you go to bookshops and offer kind of activities. Is there anything, obviously home educators could reach out and buy your books. Is there anything else that you do? Because I know you do a free monthly World of Wildlife, which is an online club for adults, isn't it?
Yeah, yes, I do. So World of Wildlife is just really an online gathering of wildlife people from around the world who just like to build their network. I usually get a speaker who comes and tells us something about what they're doing, which is cool. So you have 15 minutes of someone telling us something. And then it's a discussion around all these people. We do it on the 10th of every single month. And the time changes because then we can get the people in the UK don't have to wake up in the middle of the night every single time. So it rotates from three different times, basically. The best way to find out about that is probably by either signing up to my newsletter or liking me on social media, and then it'll just show up. That's always the best way to do it so that you'll know exactly when it is. But everyone is welcome. You don't have to be someone who works with wildlife. You might just be someone who loves wildlife. That's fine too. You get to talk to me and talk to the real Wildlife Juan because he comes every month. And yeah, that's a fun thing to do. So I have that. I also have a lot of resources on my website that homeschool parents and teachers might like. There's like a downloadable nature journal that you can use to engage you with the books that I write, but also engage kids with their own natural environment close to home as well. So yeah, there's all sorts of things on there might be useful. Every single video, every single workshop I've got or experiment in the books has a video of how to actually do them. So those are on my YouTube page and also linked on my website as well. So lots of resources that might be useful.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely brilliant. I'm curious what's going to happen for you next. What adventures do you have planned next?
As far as writing adventures, I'm just launching into my new project and I'm so excited because I wanted to take all this learning I've done in Borneo and about wildlife, and I wanted to bring that to Australia and start exploring our Australian flora and fauna. So I've got starting this new adventure story series called Curious Kai. Curious Kai Asks Why is the first book, and it's about this young girl who has endless questions and her mum and her teachers struggle to answer them all. So eventually her mum decides that they're going to hook up their camper trailer and go in search of the scientists who can answer her questions. She becomes a homeschool child and off they go around Australia. So it's a mixture of an adventure story and a scientific investigative story as well. The scientists in this book are real. Yeah, I'm actually giving some profile to some of the real scientists doing their work, as well as having this fictional character who meets them. So yeah, I'm very excited because I've got, in my first book, we're meeting eight to 10 scientists, and I've got 7 that have said absolutely yes, I'm in so far. So things are looking really good, and I'll be focusing on that one over the next month. It's head down, bum up and right.
busy then.
yeah, that's my next adventure.
Thank you so much for joining me. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Anybody who wants to find you further, again, do you want to just re-mention your website?
Absolutely, yeah. The best way to get me is through my website because every other link is on there. Yeah, so it's Sarah with an H, SarahRPye. So sararpye.com.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Rachel. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I look forward to having more and more chats with you and maybe coming along to
the
Wildlife Club. bye for now.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Curious About Nature. If you would like to keep getting nature and outdoor learning stories and tips, hit subscribe on the podcast so you never miss an episode. Don't forget to give a 5-star rating and review to support our podcast reach. To deepen your child's connection with nature and natural world education, please check out the Nature Curious subscription box. Head over to the website buttercuplearning.com to further support your family's nature journey.